Hi, I'm Scott Jones. I'm director of the Electronic Frontiers Forum Strack at DragonCon, and this is the Marketing with Twitter panel. We want to start off, first of all, with a 10-minute PowerPoint presentation. I think before I do that, let's have Dana, if you could just introduce yourself and then jump into the presentation. We'll have the other speakers introduce themselves afterwards.
Okay.
My name is Dana Wilhoit. I was a newspaper reporter for 17 years. I quit the business a couple of years ago. I wanted to stay home and spend more time with my kids. And I now make my living writing press releases and web content for people. And I get pretty much, I'd say 95% of my clients from Twitter. I mean, I make my living off of Twitter. I'm probably too dependent on it, because if Twitter goes out of business, I'm in deep trouble. But I probably get a client or two a week from Twitter, and I've managed to build up my following to about close to 20,000 people, like 19,800 something or other. And I probably spend, is that better? About 45 minutes a day on Twitter, three times a day, 10, 15 minutes. And I'm just going to describe to you exactly how I built up my following, targeted following. It's very important. You need followers who are going to be interested in what you particularly are doing. And I will tell you what I do on Twitter to send clients to my website. And pretty much it. Do you want me to just get going?
Yeah.
Okay. Just real quick, that's my website, my homepage, and one way to build up your followers on Twitter. You see those little icons on the top? If anyone clicks on those, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. LinkedIn is also pretty good for business. I know we're here to talk about Twitter, but LinkedIn and Facebook, and if you're good with videos, YouTube are also really good ways to broadcast yourself, build up your personal brand, get clients. So, let's see. Also, this is my Google Analytics. As you see, I get the vast majority of my traffic from Twitter. There's a website called the Warrior Forum, which is an internet marketing forum. If you do any kind of internet marketing, they're pretty good. But I can send like hundreds of people a day to my website just by, what I'll do is I'll write like a good interesting post on Twitter. In my case, it might be something like how to get your press release picked up by the media, and then I'll put a link to it and link back to my site. And when you do something useful like that, people do what's called retweeting, which is they'll just put RT and they'll put a link and send it out to all their followers, so it can get spread around to tens of thousands of people. If my most popular page is a list of free press release distribution sites. So you put good resources, good free resources on your site, and a lot of people on Twitter will just do your advertising for you for free. And as you see there, I've got close to 20,000 followers, and it just takes a little time, and I will show you how to do that. Also, notice I've got a custom Twitter background. We're going to talk about that in a minute. So the three steps to Twitter success are build up a big targeted following on Twitter. My goal is to get many tens of thousands, you know, 50, 60, 70,000 people following me on Twitter. And the reason for that is everybody who follows you sees your tweets and they're a potential customer. And if you only have a few dozen or a few hundred people following you on Twitter, frankly, you're not going to have much of a business. My business has just grown exponentially as my number of followers has grown. And the other thing is, it's good for social proof. Basically, if people see that you have 5 or 10 or 20,000 people following you, they think that you know what you're talking about. This is not necessarily true, but it's just a good way to make people, you know, I hate to say it, but it makes them think you're important. And then, of course, you have to follow that up by being interesting and by having quality stuff. But if they see you've got a few dozen people following you on Twitter, then they're just not going to take you that seriously. So it's important to build up a big Twitter following, but again, quality targeted Twitter following is important. So when I was talking about the custom Twitter background, this is an example of the standard default Twitter background and the standard default avatar, and it just looks awful. So you want to, when people see that kind of background, they basically think of you as a low budget business that can't afford the, you know, $50, $75 for a custom Twitter background. And it's cheap. You can put, when you do a custom Twitter background in that border area on the side, you can put
your link. It's not clickable. It's just an image, but you can put your phone number, you can put your email address, you can do a lot of advertising. And you also want to upload some kind of avatar picture. I have my own picture on there, you know, your logo, something on there so that you don't have that hideous box, which again just makes it look like either you're some anonymous weirdo on the internet and you're hiding your identity, or you don't know how to use Twitter. It's just super cheap and easy to get a much better, more professional look. So to upload the custom Twitter background, at the top there, settings, click on settings, and that will take you to this page, and there you have design, which I have blacked out, and you click on that and you upload it. It's super simple. You can just upload it from your desktop, and next to it is picture. If any of you, the person who did my Twitter background, and I have about 30 handouts in the back that have a list of Twitter resources, but I didn't print enough, so the person who did my background, custom twitter backgrounds.com, so that's pretty easy to remember, and he charges like $67 a background. But you know, or you can also just Google custom Twitter background. That's Fangoria. That's an example of a custom designed Twitter background. I just picked it because it was, you know, appropriate to the convention. But also, we're going to build up your Twitter following. You want to get people in your field. I mean, if I was a dog trainer, I would go follow all the followers of Cesar Milan or whatever his name is, the dog whisperer. He has a Twitter account. See where it says followers, where he's got this, Fangoria magazine has 6,001 followers. If you're in the fantasy or horror field, you would want to click on that followers link, and it will show you the list of their followers, and you want to just go follow a whole bunch of people. This is exactly how I followed a specialist in small business owners, because I do press releases. I figured small businesses might do press releases. So you just want to Google the name of leaders of your field along with the word Twitter. And most people these days have a Twitter account. And for instance, Marvel, I know they sold out to Disney, but anyway, see, they've got, you know, 36,739 followers. So you would want to go, again, if you're like in the comics industry, you might want to go follow a bunch of their followers. I have a client who custom builds bicycles for like $8,000, and I told him to go follow all of Lance Armstrong's Twitter followers, because those are the kind of people who would be interested in, you know, an expensive custom-built bike. So you just have to be a little creative. Think about who's a leader in your field who might be interested in what you have to sell or promote or write or draw. And to build up your list of followers, you go to, like, this is my homepage. If you wanted to follow my followers, you would click on, see at the top where it says 19,799 followers, you'd click on the brown followers underneath it, and this will take you, this is a little cautionary example of why you don't want to follow everyone back, because who can tell me why you wouldn't want to follow most of these people back? I actually think I only see one on there I'd want to follow back.
Most
of them are spammers or other marketers. I mean, we've got Megan there who's clicked the link to browse my nude profile, and she can't spell the word click. So most of these are not people who are ever going to buy anything from you. I don't necessarily object to other marketers if I think it's a real profile, like a real person, but people go on, they create like dozens or hundreds or thousands of fake spam Twitter accounts. So you want to look at, you know, you go find your leader in your field, you look at their list of followers, and it pays to not waste your time, you know, as you go through, like, look through the followers and make sure that they're a real person, you know, like that Andrew Addison looks like he's having a conversation with someone. He's an actual human being, so you would follow him. And to do that, you click on the little gear, and I'm already following that person, so you don't see the follow option, but you have an option to unfollow anybody, and you have an option to block them. Now, which brings me to the next thing. Twitter allows you to follow up to 2,000 people until you get 2,000 people following you back. So what you do is you go follow up to 2,000 people, then you wait a few days till everybody who's going to follow you back is going to do so. Some of them do that because they got an email saying that you're now following them and they go check you out. Some of them do that because they have an automatic software program which auto-follows everyone who follows them. And the downside of that is you'll be following like 3/4 spammers and 1/4 real human beings. So it saves you time, but that there's a price and that you'll just, you're following a lot of people who are useless. So you get up to 2,000 followers, now you're not allowed to follow anyone else. So what you do is you wait a few days, you go in, you click on that little gear thing next to each person's name. There's different ways to do this. You can hire a virtual assistant to do this, you can do it yourself, but you unfollow everyone who is not following you back. And the way you can tell if they're not following you back is if you don't see that direct message thing on there, if you can't direct message them, they're not following you back, so you dump them. Because they can't see, they're not following you, they're taking up your Twitter space, and they'll never buy from you if they're not following you because they can't see your tweets. So I do that a couple times a week. I follow a bunch of people, I wait a few days, I clear out everybody not following me back, and that's how I got up to almost 20,000 followers, which is why it's sort of an illusion that, you know, when people say that you've got 50 or 100,000 followers, it doesn't really mean that you're that fascinating unless, you know, you're a celebrity. It really means that you went in and spent this kind of time building up your following. I mean, anyone could do it. It just takes a little time. There's software that does it. There's, you know, you can hire people. You can just spend time to do it. You can pay your kid to do it, you know. So now, once you've built up your big list of targeted followers, I want to talk a little bit about building up your brand, your reputation on Twitter. I got on Twitter, and within a few weeks, I had people referring to me as the press release expert. I mean, this was like brand new business, brand new website that I had. This was like almost a year ago, I think. December 14th. And what I did, as I mentioned earlier, I write a bunch of good, useful posts. I give away tons of free information, and people will read it. And generally what they'll do is they'll go on my site. They'll be like, oh, you really look like you know what you're talking about, but that looks hard. Can you do it for me? And they hire me. And it is just that simple. The more good information you give away, the more business you get. You know, you get the goodwill, you get people showing that you know what you are talking about, you get the good reputation. In this case, being on Twitter got me invited by a site called PRWeb, which is one of the leaders in the press release fields, to do a webinar for them. I got so much business from that webinar, I barely slept for 2 weeks. I probably made like 10 grand from that webinar. I mean, I was thrilled, but I was also like almost weeping with exhaustion. I got so much business. So it gets you the attention of people who are in your field. It gets you connections. Let's see, again, just somebody, you know, saying that I'm the PR authority. I was shocked because I was like brand new to the site. I'm like, wow, you fill up your website or blog with a bunch of good, useful posts and resource links. People go to your site and, you know, they start referring you around. The other thing, though, is when you're on Twitter, you want to join in the conversation. You don't want to just be tweeting out links to your website. I mean, I do tweet a lot of links to, like, here's my list of free press release sites, but you also want to go on there and, is that the end? Perhaps it is. If you do nothing but tweet out links to your site, people start perceiving you as being overly self-promotional, and they don't like that much. And also, when somebody visits your homepage to see if they want to follow you, they're going to look, they're going to see a list of all your most recent tweets. And if it's nothing but a long series of links back to your site, they'll be like, eh. Whereas you want to go on there, you want to ask people questions, you want to talk to other people in your field, you want to answer questions, you want to, you know, put your quote of the day on, make conversation, talk about the movie you just saw, that kind of thing. So that's pretty much the end of the slideshow. So if anyone, does anyone have any questions?
Yeah, you mentioned press releases, and I haven't checked this lately, but it seems like a lot of the more popular sites only support a fairly bland text corporate press release. Folks giving in a more like the rich media type press release with embedded YouTube videos, interviews from your executives, that kind of thing.
It's more expensive to do that. I mean, PRWeb, for instance, if you want to embed a video, I think that's their $360 option. I think that's getting more popular because, you know, YouTube videos are, yeah.
Because I think, you know, it seems like one of the problems with the press release format is historically they've been very corporate and dry and text.
Right, they're just like a short, simple news announcement. I mean, online press releases are basically good for search engine optimization and backlinks.
Okay, I wanted to move on to the other thing.
Okay. But you can ask me any questions afterwards if you want to.
Okay, DL, if you could introduce yourself and tell us what you're doing with Twitter.
Sure. I'm Gail Martin. I write the Chronicles of the Necromancer Fantasy Adventure series, The Summoner, The Blood King, Darkhaven, and coming in December, Dark Ladies Chosen. On the other side of my life, for 25 years, I have been a senior marketing executive with Corporate America, and for the last 7 years, I own Dream Spinner Communications. So I spend my days writing marketing and my evenings writing for fantasy adventure. So I also live both sides of this, and I have found Twitter to be extremely advantageous on both sides. And a lot of it does come down to initiating that conversation, having a way to follow up with people after events. So the people that I meet at events, I follow on Facebook and Twitter, and if it's appropriate, LinkedIn, and it deepens the connection and keeps the dialogue going. I also tweet quotes, contests, interesting tidbits, links back to my sites on both sides. I have two different Twitter sites, Gail Z. Martin for my fantasy adventure, Gail Martin PR for the marketing side. So content that's appropriate on both sites. And I use a couple of virtual assistants who help me keep up with all the posts, because I blog, I tweet, I've got a number of balls in the air at all times, and so I write the content and they help me keep it posted and flowing frequently. So I'm a big fan of Tweet Later, which allows you to enter tweets and have them flow throughout the time period. That means you don't have to get on every day and tweet, and you can have your tweets spaced out throughout the time. I'm a big fan of using a virtual assistant, and I'll be honest, I have found my best virtual assistants through Eliance.com because my marketing company is a completely virtually staffed company, and I work with folks all over the U.S. and North America. And I've also found that Twitter is wonderful for staying in touch with readers, and I'm running a contest right now through Twitter back to both my homepage site and my Squidoo site. So. Yes, I agree with the things that Dana said, but I'm finding that it works in real life.
My name is Ethan Gilsdorf, and I am a journalist, and I have a brand new book out. This is it right here. It's called Fantasy Freaks and Gaming Geeks, an epic quest for reality among role players, online gamers, and other dwellers of imaginary realms. And the book has only been out for 2 weeks, so it's a brand new book. It's my first book. And I'm relatively new to using Twitter, but I think it's working pretty well so far. I come from this field through marketing. I used to be in public relations for higher education. I used to be a marketing and events coordinator for a bookstore, and also worked for an email marketing firm overseas for several years. I feel like, for me anyway, promoting this book in particular, It really matters what my audience is, because there are some people who are going to read this book who don't even know what Twitter is. They don't have a Twitter account. They're barely getting on Facebook. And so while it's important for me to try to, you know, use Twitter and whatever the latest next thing is, and I'm sure next year there'll be something else that we all have to do, it's not my only tool in my arsenal. And I have to remember, you know, I do keep in mind that I'm in addition to, as Gail was just saying, I have a blog, I do Facebook updates. I have a fan page on my Facebook account just for my book, in addition to just good old-fashioned emails, which isn't that old, actually. The thing that I find is that it's important to also be able to connect with my audience or my developing audience, you know, face-to-face. And so we'll probably get to this later in terms of developing mm-hmm. the conversation and what works and what doesn't. But I see it as an important tool that I'll be using more and more as this year goes on and I launch on my book tour, which is really beginning now for the next 10 weeks. But there's going to be a lot of other tools that I'll be using as well for the promotion of this book. So,
mm-hmm. Hi, I'm Cunning Minx, and I feel like very one of these things is not like the other. I do the Polyamory Weekly podcast. We talk about mostly relationships, a little bit of sex. And I'm a big fan of Twitter. I'm also a social media consultant. I Twitter on behalf of several different clients. And I've used it to promote my own podcast and my own work, which is all sort of not-for-profit fun. It's mostly for activism within the community, so people know what poly is and it's a valid relationship and lifestyle choice. But I'm also happy to speak about the fact that I do as a social media consultant who just sort of learned things along the way with no official background in PR or anything, I really came to use this as a tool that's very helpful to my clients. I'm especially a big fan of using Twitter for not-for-profits. And it's funny, I've got not-for-profit clients and then very, very for-profit clients, and they all really love Twitter. And I also like the other tools, too. I think Twitter should be one tool in your arsenal. Try it, see if you like it. I cross-post everything to Facebook, so it actually looks like I'm on Facebook all the time, and I'm actually not. And I love all that. I try all the little tools and gadgets, so I'm happy to answer all those type of questions and help you figure out how to engage more actively with your audience, fans, whoever that may be. Yeah.
Hi. I'm probably going to be, if I'm lucky, taking on something of a problem case in terms of marketing for a gentleman that runs a couple of nightclubs in the local area. He's one of these types that, just kind of like what you guys mentioned, you have to diversify things out when you're associated. You can't just concentrate on one thing. Right now, Twitter is his baby. Like, I want everything in the world on Twitter. I want a million followers immediately and all this other kind of stuff. I have difficulty kind of explaining to him that you can't put all your eggs in one basket. So I was wondering if you might be able to give me some fuel to tell this guy, hey, listen, we got to spread this out a little bit. These are the limitations of Twitter.
Well, let me jump in first and say there are some ways you can kind of split that hair, because you can use Twitter certainly with RSS feeds and widgets to put your Twitter feeds as well as your blog feeds in many places at once. So you can feed that onto your homepage, you can feed it into your Facebook page, your LinkedIn page, whatever other social media sites. If they support widgets and apps that use RSS, then you'll be able to feed in your Twitter tweets and your blog posts. The nice thing about that is it allows you to repurpose content so that you're tweeting once or blogging once and having it fill up and freshen content in more than one place. So if you've got a client that's absolutely thrilled with Twitter, great, tweet a lot of things, but then you can reuse that in many places to create fresh content. I would say that for a business like that, tweeting about upcoming specials, upcoming bands, drink specials, all kinds of things like that are great. But to really build up more of a relationship, just with the limitations of what you can post easily on Twitter. Now, is he open at all to having a Facebook page?
Oh, absolutely.
He has that as well.
He's open to it. He's just wanting to carpet bomb this one particular thing, which I'm advising against at all costs. I don't believe in carpet bombing when it comes to certain media and networking and marketing.
I think you have to play to the strengths of each of the different social media sites. Twitter's great for keeping that visibility, but Facebook is great for keeping the videos out there and the larger posts. You have to play to the strengths of each of the media pages.
And if I could jump in on that too, the argument you can make with your client is you have to go where the fans are. Mm-hmm. Some fans are going to be on Twitter. But as you started pointing out, Dana, that not everyone is on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Some are on Facebook. Some are still going to want an email newsletter. That's the argument for diversifying, is that he will then only get people who are on Twitter. And if he wants everyone, he also needs to do the research and find out where the fans actually are. That's how you pick your social media strategy. You don't just do it because it's cool. Like any other marketing tool, you strategize it.
Well, and can I point out that not everybody is on Twitter every moment of every day?
What?
Yes, as novel
they
as that
sleep
sounds.
With their iPhones, really? It's just
so,
me, I guess.
So, the point is, if you're posting in more than one place, just because of the structure of the different pages, some of the things that you post may be visible for longer, may not immediately scroll off the bottom. You've got to play to the strengths.
So. I run a convention called BomoCon, which I don't know how people even know about, but it's here in Atlanta. And I have a Twitter, Facebook, LiveJournal, MySpace, blog, website, mailing list. So I've got all these things I personally manage as well for the con. And I'm really curious as to how I can manage all of these effectively, if you guys have found a way to manage all of this effectively in like one pot. Because obviously Facebook and Twitter, you can do the status updates the same. But, I've got so much I'm managing on my own, and I'm just curious how you guys might have managed all the social media.
I could just briefly say that I find it exhausting and impossible. And I have a publicist at my publisher who is doing other stuff, and I'm really in charge of. I mean, at one point, my publicist said, or my marketing director at the publisher said, "Oh, we'll build you a website, and you know, here's some great ideas, here's examples of what we did in the past." And then 6 months passed, 9 months passed, and I said, "Where's my website?" And they said, "Oh, well, we actually let go of that person in our department." You know, anyway, the reality being that, you know, what's happening with the economy, that there's just obviously fewer people out there who are going to be doing it for you. And yeah, potentially completely exhausting and completely consuming. And I have to remember just that I am only one man, and I only have so many hours in the day, and that I do have to stop and think, well, what is the most important thing that I can do today that's going to, you know, reach the most number of people? And you're right, it is impossible. Of course, there are all these widgets that can help you kind of cover all the bases at the same time, but, you know, be careful. Well, also, and get friends.
and get friends, and some of those friends can be paid friends, which is perfectly okay. So, I mean, interns can be great if you can get interns, but this is why I was doing everything myself until about a year ago, and then I now have 9 virtual assistants who help me with different aspects of what I'm doing. And it's, I create the content, they handle the distribution under guidelines that I give them. So yes, I friend people on Facebook and Twitter using the same kind of guidelines you're talking about, but I've educated my virtual assistants so they know who to friend, who not to friend, who to follow, who not to follow, and can represent me well out there.
So I also have a follow-up to that, which is, so Twitter in particular, we have about 1,100 followers on Twitter, 1,500 on Facebook. But I'm curious, how do you guys manage to, my event's like once a year, so MomoCon is an event, we have many events, but how do I maintain a contact throughout the rest of the time? Because, I mean, I guess it's a similar situation with book release. How do you keep speaking on your book and not being, you know, spamming them about your book?
Well, I can tell you what I do, which is, you know, every time I do an event, I video blog from the event. I post the links to the video blog. I do a lot of conventions and speaking events, so that's a lot of natural news. I let people know where I'm going to be. I let people know where I've been. I run contests. There are always new people coming in. But I think also, if you look at it as a way to cross-promote other non-competing events, as well, you've always got something new to say. So if you're turning people on to new cons, new events that they haven't experienced before, you're adding value. I love to tweet about my other author friends. And if I read a book and I love it, if I meet another author and I think they're great, I'll tweet about them. I'll cross-market. They'll tweet about me. Now we're sharing resources because I know my readers read 200 books a year. They might read mine once or twice, but they need another 198 good books. I can refer them to those authors, and now I'm adding value.
If I can just add to that, yeah, it goes on based on what Dana was saying earlier about not annoying your followers, and if you're perceived as constantly plugging the one event, the one book, over and over and over again. I've already gotten comments. I was at Gen Con a few weeks ago, and I was all excited because I was, you know, uploading photos to my Facebook and everything, and then several of my friends said, you know, Ethan, enough, you know, we got it, you're at Gen Con, you're selling your book. So it's a very careful balance to maintain, and yeah, if you can, you know, tweet and blog about other things in your general field, A, you'll be producing a lot of goodwill because people will see you as helping to promote, as long as you don't see yourself in competition with these other events, and you never are, right? All these people go to the same events in the same area for the most part. And B, you might get a developer reputation of having a website where people will go to get information. And sure enough, when 9 months go by and it's 3 months before your event is about to kick off again, you can then start switching over your content to really start plugging, you know, that particular mm-hmm. event that you're doing.
I'll just add one quick comment. I just read Trust Agents, Chris Brogan and Julian Smith. One of Chris's basic rules is plug and advertise and speak well of other people 12 times as often as you talk about yourself.
Be generous.
Mm-hmm.
I have a law firm. I'm a partner of a firm, and we have multiple areas of practice. Our business litigation clients don't care about divorce. Is there a way to separate who gets what tweet in Twitter, or how do you manage
accounts.
That?
You could create divorce law, Twitter / divorce law, Twitter / business law. And it's not a bad idea to do that because if they've got a particular intense interest. The other thing that is good to do is get people, if you saw on my homepage, I have a way for people to, on the top right-hand side, I have a way for people to sign up for emails. So you're getting these targeted clients back to your website, and you could send specific, email newsletters. So you're trying to be as targeted as possible. I've created a specific account for each type of law that you practice.
And how often should you send out a tweet for each one to do it enough that you give enough information, but not so much that you're inundating people and irritate them into dropping you as a person they're following?
Well, you won't irritate them if you do what we were sort of talking about, not just talk about your business. I mean, you could talk about general law updates. You could, you know, like this legal ruling has huge impact on whatever. This case just came down, it could affect you. So you're giving away free information again. You know, enter into conversation with people, recommend good law journals, that kind of thing. But if you're not on Twitter daily, I am on Twitter. I go on for about 10, 15 minutes. I use on my list of resources back there, hellotext.com or ping.fm will simultaneously update all of your social networking sites. You still have to go to each site and check the messages and reply to people, but you just go on there once in the morning, once in the afternoon, once in the evening, and you're doing that because people check in on Twitter and Facebook at different times of day. So if you do in the morning, somebody else who checks in a few hours later isn't going to see it. But intersperse your promotional tweets with, you know, personal stuff, you know, your favorite quote, again, like I was saying, just conversation. As if you're at a Chamber of Commerce meeting, you wouldn't like go immediately start talking about your business and promoting yourself. You'd ask people about themselves. Twitter is your online Chamber of Commerce.
I think the other thing for a business like that is linking back your expertise to things that are in the headlines, things that are everybody is talking about. So, you know, when there's a big celebrity divorce, maybe it's a great time to be talking about prenups because everybody else is talking about prenups because, oh, did you see so-and-so and so-and-so just got divorced? So, you know, tying like that into the headlines is going to keep what you're talking about very topical, very fresh, and with the hashtags, that's also a great way to make sure that you're coming up with the hot topics.
Hi, I have a comment and a question, and I appreciate you guys' opinions on this as well. As someone who is a consumer of digital media, you know, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook, I am obsessed with RSS feeds, it seems to me that not all content is always appropriate for every single platform. What comes in on Twitter may not necessarily be appropriate for Facebook in terms of the frequency or the particular content that comes in. I may not want to see 30 posts from someone on Facebook in a day where I might not mind getting that via Twitter because it seems to me that they're different services for a reason. And so I'm curious as to you guys' opinions on that. And then related to that, I work for a public television station, and public television is trying very hard to go into the 21st century. And, we have a lot of folks who are having a hard time thinking of anything beyond just a 30-year-old broadcast model. We just started up a Twitter account, and our marketing department is having a really hard time figuring out what goes on Twitter. You know, seriously, what makes Twitter different? And what do you put there that you wouldn't put on Facebook? I guess these things are sort of related. That would be different from what you would put out in a weekly email, that would be different than what you do in a promotional spot that would air on the television. And we've kind of tried to give them guidelines, but I'm curious as to what you guys might tell, you know, a dying broadcast medium, how to get into new age.
Well, I did a program on social media for the Georgia Council for nonprofits back in May, and that was one of the very similar things that we heard from a lot of the nonprofits at that conference. And, you know, take a look at some of the ones that you might not expect are big on Twitter with their followings, but AARP, for example, is huge on Twitter with its following because it's mobilizing volunteers. It's letting people know, hey, the Habitat House in Sacramento needs extra people. Can you come out today at 2? Very immediate, very participatory kind of things. National Wildlife Federation has different Twitter accounts for all of its different segments, to your point there. But they're letting people know about studies, about new things coming out on TV, about new content on the website. Why does it have to be different from your email newsletter and some of your other things? Blog, Twitter about headlines for the articles that are coming out in your newsletter. Twitter about every new blog post so that people are driving, it's driving traffic to your blog. Twitter about what you just posted on the website. They should be interlaced and linking to each other. But nonprofits are finding that Twitter is working great for them. And it's because they're a creative use of communicating with their most active members.
Yeah, I would add to that. I have not-for-profit clients, too, and it is. It's a great way to get the interaction going. But I'm going to back up and give a much more general answer, which is you're not going to know what your fans want unless you check. You can just start Twittering things. But I recommend before you start any social media tool, you always listen first. Go and monitor for 2 months. Start, you know, before you tweet, go out to other Twitter accounts of people that are in the field, that are your target audience, see what they're Twittering and see what they're retweeting. See what engages them in conversation. See what they care about. Instead of just diving in and saying, well, I think they care about this, so I'm just going to write about this. Do your research first and consider it a constant, ongoing process of doing research. I believe it's really important to go into any social media campaign with an open mind and with a sense of curiosity. You may think you know what your audience wants. Try it, and it's constant course correction. I was actually talking with a fan the other day who's a pilot, and he told me that when you fly, you're never on course, that every single second you're constantly correcting, and I think that's how social media is. You can never stop listening to what it is that your fans want.
The suggestion I have for the public broadcasting, I love public broadcasting, and one of the things just to help you out that I would suggest would be to, go ahead. I'm very interested in how the people who make documentaries, how they come up with the idea, if you can have like a little snippet of that. Or, I mean, that's the whole point of Twitter, to make it personal. And the other point of, you know, public broadcasting is for the people. I mean, it's like, it sounds like a no-brainer to me, but trying to make it work is a different story. But I would be interested in that, like for the month or for the week or, you know, something like that. Okay, now, my question. My question is that I am managing two talents, two musicians. One is a group and one is a single musician. But the thing is that the whole point about it is that they're characters. Getting them more involved in the digital age, specifically with Twitter, and the personal aspect of it. Do you have any suggestions of how to maximize their character to say, this person is going to be here. This is what's going on with them. Is it too fake to put it out there as a brand? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
do you have
I know
any suggestions?
I think some of the advice that you just gave to the PBS girl is good advice for your clients as well, which is think about the behind-the-scenes pieces. What went into, what's some of the behind-the-scenes things that happened before or after some of their gigs? What are some of the on-the-road stories? What led them into where they are with their career right now? Those are the kinds of things people would like to ask them if they could sit down with them for a drink. So maximize that kind of conversation, as well as, you know, you can tweet the photos from their latest gig, you can tweet clips for audio, for video, so you can make that an interactive thing right there. But I think the behind the scenes, on the road pieces, you know, even if it's lost two of the amps today, can't wait to see how this is going to work. That kind of thing gives it an immediacy, and it gives it a feel as if they're right there on the road with them.
Can I ask a clarifying question? You mean that the people are actually Twittering as a role that they're playing, like it's not Nathan Fillion, but it's Captain Hammer?
Yeah.
Is that just me?
Beyonce on stage is known as
Sasha Pierce. Sasha Pierce.
Sasha Pierce. So if Sasha Pierce went ahead and got an account, obviously everybody knows it's Beyonce, but to maximize her brand.
Oh, I see.
Getting the account name as Sasha Pierce.
Oh, I see. You know, I ask because I'm not a fan of what we would call like character blogging and character tweeting, like a fake, like I'm Daffy Duck and I'm tweeting.
Oh, yeah,
that's just really cheesy, or I'm the Geico Gecko and I'm tweeting. I think it's just really dorky because it's so obviously marketing and people don't want to be marketed at. That's why they tend to adopt social media. They want to be interacted with, not marketed at.
Right. Well, I was thinking when we go ahead and do gigs, you know, find different unique ways to go ahead and market to the people that actually come down to support, you know, hand out a business card, get them interactive into...
I see. So you're asking is, okay, so which name should it be under? I think whatever name is on the business card would work, right? Don't you think? Whatever the branding is, and if people know them as, you know, right. Daffy Duck, then Twitter is Daffy Duck. If people don't know the real name, then don't use the real name.
Can I just add something that, right? I think there's an inverse, relationship between how famous the person is and how likely it is that they're actually the person doing the tweeting. Oh, yeah. So if your clients are relatively unknown or somewhere sort of in the beginnings of their career, even if it's not really them tweeting, there's a very good chance that most of the fans or people, the fan base you'll be developing will, you know, there's a pretty good chance that they'll think that it's really them. As they become more famous, you know, maybe we like to think that we're getting these you know, tweets from Eddie Izzard. I don't know.
I think Nathan Fillion is actually following me. He's stalking me on Twitter.
The other thing I would add is that the real solution to your problem is, I think, to try to get someone else to speak for you. You know, if you can find someone else who's well-known who can be plugging your events or whatever, that's even better. I mean, I got very lucky in that I got for this event here at DragonCon, I was able to connect with the guy who... is one of the writers for Geek Dad on Wired.com. Mm-hmm. And so instead of me with my very small following at this point saying, hey, I'm at Dragon Con, he actually got a hold of a copy of the book, mentioned he was going to be mentioning on his site, and then he has been, since I've been here, saying, oh, by the way, you know, Ethan Gilsdorf is down at, you know, booth 508, you know, go check him out. And that's golden for me because, you know, A, he's got, you know, a huge, much huger following than I would ever have, and B, he's a credible... a source that's not biased, right? So I'm not perceived as just, you know, blowing my own horn. Here, someone else is blowing it for me.
Well, and that's where the being generous piece also comes in. Yeah. Because what I've found is that when you tell people about things that you've genuinely found and enjoyed, whether they are other bands, other writers, other podcasts, whatever it is, people find out, you know, they've got their Google Alerts sets. They're finding out that you're talking about them. And more often than not, there's some way that will come back to you, and they'll check you out and then give you a plug. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but it'll happen. And so that being generous piece definitely helps. Just to the, do you tweet in character, do you tweet out of character? I don't tweet in any character other than myself, but I have done guest blogs by some of my fictional characters. And I have... I've done a lot of interviews as Gail Z. Martin, and people have probably heard, you know, I don't have time for a whole lot of excitement. I write books. That takes up most of my time. But my characters lead very exciting lives. So I've done interviews in character. And I have had readers absolutely love that because they felt that they were really getting questions asked of the characters that they would have loved to have asked if they'd have ever met them in a bar for a drink. So maybe not on Twitter, but if you're blogging and you're using other social media and you're trying to further those characters, you can employ some of those techniques elsewhere.
Quick question. I'm just curious how much time y'all spend actually responding to people that are talking about you on Twitter. It sounds like you've got kind of a formula, you know, promote some of your things, talk about other people, but do you ever talk back to people talking about you?
Always.
Yes. I have surprised a lot of people by, you know, and this is where I love Google Alerts, and I love, you know, seeing where I'm showing up out there. I have shown up on many a blogger's page after they've done a review of my book, after they've tweeted about me, after their podcast has mentioned me, and out of the blue shown up and said, hey, thanks a lot. I really appreciate the shout out. And, they didn't know I was looking. But I was. And then that's led to great relationships because I do two big online events every year, the Hawthorne Moon event and the Days of the Dead blog tour. And so often those have led into me coming back to them and saying, hey, would you like to be part of my next online event? And that's great promotion for them because it gets promoted internationally as an upcoming event. And it's great promotion for me because they introduce me to their readership. So yes, absolutely.
I'll share two tools I can't live without. The first one is TweetLater, which I think you mentioned, which is now called socialoomph.com. terrible name. I like TweetLeader so much better. And the other one is called backtweets.com. And what's really great is you can put in any URL. Say I write a blog entry. I put in the URL, and it will show me every single person that has retweeted a link to that. So then I'll go through every couple of days, and I'll check and see who has tweeted a link to my site, and I will go through and personally thank them for it. Because I believe in the interaction. I believe you should thank every retweeter. I believe you should thank everyone who tweets a link to you.
Mm-hmm. A note on that. Will that track through a bit.ly?
Yes. Yes, that's really... It'll track through any link shortener. You just need to put the original long link in, and then there's also an RSS button if you want to keep tracking afterwards.
Can you explain a little bit more about how you use a virtual assistant, how much you pay them, what type of tasks they do for you?
Sure. I love Elance.com because it allows me to specify the kind of project that I want to hire, and then I get bids from literally all over the world, and I can see who's a good match both for skills and for personality, because when I find somebody who's a good resource, I use them over and over and over again, and we actually get to know each other. What it really comes down to, and this is why I think it's very important to do your own stuff first, to know what it is, what it takes to do it, and how you want it done, so that you can give good direction. I think we've all had bad bosses who knew what they wanted done, but they didn't know how to tell us to do it. You don't want to be one of them. So you have to know enough about it to be able to give good direction. As far as what they cost, it's going to depend on what you're asking them to do. The price for a web designer is going to be different than the price for somebody to post links on social bookmarking sites. But I think that the great thing about Elance is people know that buyers are looking for bargains, and especially with the economy right now, there are a lot of people who are, you know, really competitive with their pricing out there. So the best thing for success is having a very coherent idea of what you want, how to measure it, how to do it, and then being sure that you're matching that up with somebody who has the proven ability to do it. And you can do that by seeing some of their portfolio, some of their references. I've had tremendously good luck with that, and people that I've been working with for a couple of years now.
That's right, I love my VAs.
I love my VAs, all of them.
I have another question. Well, actually, it's more of a point of discussion. I want to get your reaction. I have historically had big concerns about using the exact same text over different social media platforms. For one, you may have subscribers on different forums, and if they see the same thing on all three sites, you know, I've seen it as kind of a potential turnoff. And the second point of that I'm not an SEO guy, I'm not a search engine guy, but I have been led to believe in the past that search engines would penalize sites where they would see basically the same text popping up all over the place, especially if it was word for word. And I just wanted to get some reactions based on those statements.
I can tell you that repurposing is one of the things that will keep you slightly sane with trying to keep up with. I can't guarantee completely sane, but it'll help
it
you a
help,
lot.
Yeah.
For example, if I give a teleseminar for marketingprofs.com or PR Newswire and have it transcribed, then I'll take the transcripts and have that turned into several articles. Then I'll cut up the articles into shorter blog posts. Then I'll pull the main points from the blog posts into tweets. So there's going to be some tweaking in there, so it isn't completely word for word. But, you know, I found that that's just an element of remaining sane and still trying to keep up with the content demands everywhere. And you're retooling the information as appropriate to the forum. And then, of course, you can also post those articles out there on a place like easyinarticles.com, and now you're getting picked up in blogs all over the world.
I had a question that went back to what you said about not doing fictitious characters. Well, how do you handle if you have to have multiple pen names for different genres and not going insane doing brand new content for everything?
Basically, there's only so many hours in the day. You know, I personally would have a hard time handling multiple accounts. It's enough for me to maintain. I mean, unless you're hiring somebody to do some of this for you, you have to look at how long it's going to take you to, because to do a quality job, takes me about an hour for me as one person. If I had, you know, 10 different or 5 different pen names, honestly, I don't think I could do it. I just, realistically.
I don't use pen names because, frankly, it took me too darn long to get where I am, and I want everybody to know it's me. And I love hearing back from people I knew in high school. But a good friend of mine is Faith Hunter, who also writes as Gwen Hunter, and she writes in 2 different genres. She writes in fantasy, and then she also writes in kind of a cozy mystery kind of world, and it's not a real intersecting readership. And she does blog under both names in very different content, very different personas, because her readership is very different, and what flies with one readership does not fly with the other. So I think it's just a matter of, I'm sure there's something else that she doesn't do because she's got to write twice as many blogs. So it comes down to priorities.
I would agree with that. As somebody, my parents, oddly enough, did not name me Cunning Minx. I know, that's really surprising.
It's not what you told me.
I know, just like, I can't believe you lied to me. Transparency in social media. I actually have multiple Twitter accounts because in addition to, I'm very hands-on with social media. I Twitter for myself as a professional. I Twitter for Cunning Minx within the community. And then I also Twitter on behalf of clients. So I do, my Seismic desktop has like 13 columns in it, and I'm always juggling all these things. And I find that to keep myself sane, I set expectations for myself, and I make that clear with my followers. They know that at these days that they're not going to be seeing very much blogging, that it's going to be Twittering and podcasting. Cunning Minx will come out with a podcast, but they're not going to see very much in the blog. And unless they start saying, you know what, we'd really like to see more blog posts, and then, you know, only certain hours in the day, so I'll shift. It's based on what they want and how they choose to interact with me, and then I choose what I have time for.
Can I point out that it might, just might be possible that your readers also have a life, and so they may not be completely glued to their screen looking for the next word from you at every available second of the day, as much as we like to think that.
And I thought it was all about me all the time.
So they may not notice if you run to the bathroom once in a while.
I was going to Twitter that.
Yeah, we just add that. I mean,
TMI.
As I said earlier about the balance, I mean, really, I think, I'm not sure, we have a variety of people here possibly selling a variety of products themselves, their brand, some game product they've done, a self-published novel, whatever it might be, that, you know, these social media networks are great, but there's really nothing that beats also the face-to-face. And conventions like this, you will meet so many people who either will be helpful to you now, maybe helpful to you in the future. And so while we're all busy, and I'm included, you know, busy being a dinosaur with, you know, just little fingers in front of my computer screen, you have to remember to, you know, go outside and also focus on, you know, how to be connecting with people face to face and working on those skills as well, which are just as important, I think.
This is crazy talk.
I know it is. It's heresy in this
we're
panel.
We're actually not really here.
It's just our avatars.
I was going to answer the search engine question, but the guy left. But in case anyone's curious, I'm a web developer and I work with search engine optimization. Duplicate content only, the penalty for duplicate content only applies if you have multiple pages that have the same content that are basically within the same website domain or related website domain. So if you have a Twitter post that shows up on Facebook that then shows up on your blog, A, it's too short for Google to care, and B, they're not going to penalize you because those are all showing up in different spots. So if anyone's worried about that, personally, I find it slightly annoying when I get the same stuff on all the different social networks, but Google isn't going to care and they're not going to penalize you for it. So.
You mentioned hashtags before. I tweet a lot, but I'm not really familiar with that. Can you explain how that works? What the benefits are?
I don't use hashtags. I sort of know what they are. Basically, if you put a hashtag next to a certain topic, like if you searched on Twitter for the DragonCon hashtag, you'd probably find tons of references to DragonCon, but it's just not.
A hashtag is basically going to help anybody who's interested in finding all the tweets on a certain subject find them. So assuming that everybody who is tweeting from DragonCon uses hashtag and then whatever the...
DragonCon,
there you go. As long as everybody's using the same hashtag, if you type in hashtag DragonCon in the search, then everybody can find you, and you may have people who will find you and follow you because you are associated with a certain hot topic. That way it'll trend in the hot topic section.
Exactly. And I use hashtags prolifically, in particular at conferences. Mm-hmm. I find that, first of all, I just enjoy going to cons. I enjoy meeting people. I love meeting fans and new people, and I always have a great time. So I'm always, like, if you see me, I'm always doing this because I'm always writing about whatever I think is just fascinating at a con. And what I discover is that whenever I go to a conference and I'm like, I just saw Jesus at the ATM, hashtag DragonCon.
Hashtag Jesus.
Possibly hashtag Jesus. I just saw Charisma Carpenter in the elevator, hashtag DragonCon. So first of all, one of the things is you're doing a favor for the people who run the con. Now this con is huge, DragonCon mm-hmm. doesn't care. But if it's a smaller con, like mm-hmm. say your 1 to 500 person con, if you're hashtag, everybody who is interested in that topic will be, it'll show up even if they're doing searches for things that aren't in a hashtag, first of all. And it will make them say, and you'll see this, they'll retweet you back. People you don't know will start sending an at reply saying, gosh, that sounds really fun. I wish I was there. Mm-hmm. And so what it ends up doing is you're doing free publicity for the con organizers. So it's a very generous favor that you're doing for the con organizers and for the people who can't be there. And the other thing is it makes you look like you're in the know. So I always get several hundred additional followers after I go to a conference because everybody thinks I'm cool because I was at DragonCon. And I'm doing it because I'm fun. I'll do it on behalf of my clients. I'll go to a conference and hashtag everything. And it also does help you, as you mentioned, to connect with people on a trending topic. When the Amazon fail thing happened, that was of concern to a lot of people. When Michael Jackson died, Michael Jackson was a trending hashtag. Everybody wanted to talk about it. So you'll end up gaining a lot of followers and having valuable conversations because you're following this hashtag.
For me anyway, as someone who is relatively new to Twitter, I would find it's less interesting to hear about what individual people are up to, and it's more interesting to hear about what people are talking about over, in other words, categorized, as you're saying, by topic and not by right. person. So if I had a desire or wish, I wish that Twitter would move more in the direction of subject-oriented rather than personality-oriented, but mm-hmm. that's just me.
A quick follow-up question to that question. I mean, MomoCon is a name that's not really used anywhere else. Is there any actual benefit in using a hashtag? Because I've not used it in the past. I've been aware. It's just, it didn't seem like you're using it.
If you publicize it, I go to a lot of conferences, and I always ask the organizers. Anytime I go to an event, I ask the organizers what the hashtag is because I want to help them get the word out. And if your fans are there, and if they're Twittering, ask them to use the hashtag. Put it everywhere. Put it everywhere on your site. Put it everywhere on everything. So that they, because what you're doing is enabling them to connect with each other. People who didn't know each other before, if they're following the same hashtag, and they see you're tweeting something interesting, will go and meet up in the Hyatt bar. You know, that's how you organize a flash mob on Twitter, is you find a hashtag and just go.
So I guess the question was really, though, MomoCon doesn't need a hashtag to be searching. If you actually search for it, you'll find it every time.
Mm.
So I'm just questioning, is the actual adding the hashtag itself to MomoCon actually adding to the functionality of searching?
I think it does. I think it never hurts to have a hashtag as well.
I have a question about targeted tweets, is multiple accounts, and then kind of as a built-in follow-up, an issue I have that I think maybe multiple accounts is the solution to, but I'd like to hear your input. One, I have things I do professionally and things I do personally. For example, I was at VMworld last week in San Francisco. It's a IT-type user conference, and then I'm at DragonCon this week. There are probably plenty of people that started following me at VMware last week to hear conference updates who aren't the least bit interested in DragonCon, but that's what you get. It's a personal account. I'm talking about what I'm doing. I'm not necessarily doing it for work. Second of all, because social media is so big, and I'm working for semi-large-ish IT-type vendor, the edict has gone out from some of our vice presidents in sales is you guys will tweet. Everyone in the company, sign up for a Twitter account, and if you're at a conference, you'll tweet 3 times a day, which I think it's a little annoying because it's kind of selling out, right? I'll tweet when I'm darn good and ready, but I'm glad to have a job.
I'm with you on that.
So yes, sir, I'll do it. So I'm wondering, one, does it make sense to have kind of that professional persona type Twitter account versus just whatever I want to talk about account? And, you know, I'm not an author. I'm not a famous person. I've got maybe 50 followers. It seems like a lot of work. And just throw that out for discussion with you guys. Thank you.
Speaking as somebody who, you know, does have a professional account and then a personal account or a a sexy account, the adult account, so that I don't get in trouble. It's a pain in the ass to do. And if there's, you know, if you're, as long as you keep it rated PG, and as long as you don't diss your company publicly or do anything that's against your company's social media guidelines, you don't need a second account. It's, you don't want to have to do that.
Now I have two accounts because, again, my world of small business and solo professional marketing, which is my specialty in the marketing field, it does not heavily intersect with fantasy adventure and people who go to cons. So yes, I'm sure there are some small business owners here who could benefit from some tips on PR, but that's not what they're reading my book Twitter for, and likewise, you know, going the other direction. So I separate them because the content is just completely different. And with all that, I don't have time to run a Twitter account to tell people about my cat and my kids and everything else. So the personal piece falls completely off if it doesn't fall into those two buckets. But yeah, mine wouldn't mingle at all. So I think it's completely legitimate.
When is it going to 3:30
here? I don't know.
Right.
How much time do we have, by the way? Sorry.
Are we already? Is it supposed to end at 3:30?
Or is it 4?
Yeah, you can keep going.
3:45?
The next one is at 4. So
we've got like 5, 10
minutes.
But
these people want to go too, so we don't have to keep them here forever. So.
Okay.
If you want to stay, stay. We'll talk. If you want to leave to get somewhere else, we won't take it personally.
Okay, my question is, when clearly people have varied interests as an individual, so you cannot, if you're Twittering, appear to be an automaton who is all about whatever your professional service is all the time and nothing else. So in the general, what about tweeting things like a political interest? Hey, I heard this bill is before Congress and it's about something, or maybe even particular to a state. Now clearly not all your customers or followers are in one place. How's that generally perceived? Is it just in moderation? Anything is okay?
I mean, if you did a bill, what's it, or a political thing, incendiary.
I mean, the company might not have a policy or a stance officially on whatever that is, but it's of general interest.
I'm going to say that it's very different depending on whether it's your company or somebody else's company, mm-hmm. Because it's pretty tough to fire yourself. And I think that politics, religion, a couple of those other things are, you know, third rail topics for a good reason, which is that in the business marketplace, we buy and sell from people who have good products, and it doesn't necessarily mean we want to go home and have dinner with them. So I don't really feel a need to push my personal political, religious viewpoints or non-viewpoints out on people in the forum of what I'm writing about, which is books and PR. Now, if they know me and they want to get into a good conversation down in the bar, cool, I'm okay with that. But I think you're likely to lose as many people as you gain getting into things that, does it really apply? There are other ways to give people an insight into you as a person, perhaps, that doesn't lose you business.
Plus, with 140 characters, you're really, you can't really express a lot of these, you know, as we all know, we've all had problems in email conversations with people where things get misread and misinterpreted, and there's no way to, you know, have nuance. And of all the social media, Twitter's the one that has probably the least capacity for that. So just use common sense and, I think, when in doubt, say no, I would say, probably.
I think it's a personal choice. I mean, the great thing about having the cunning minx persona is that I can talk about leftist politics, I can be really opinionated, I can talk about sex and religion, and, you know, I generally only tend to gain more followers. But with my professional persona, I pretty much stay away from it because I have this other venue where I can talk about these things. And, you know, some people I do actually know, like CC Chapman, for example, is a great, you know, big social media guy, great podcaster. And he's not overt about his political views, but if you pay attention, he will talk about political things. He'll talk about who he voted for. And it's in a very non-offensive way, though. So that's why I say it's a personal choice. It can be done without offending too many people. To me, it depends on how important it is to you to speak about politics publicly.
Yeah, if you want to be an activist, have an activist Twitter account and talk just about politics or just talk about religion. But, I mean, in the marketplace, we're there to sell to people who share an interest, and everybody's money is green. Sorry for sounding crassly commercial there, but it's the truth in the marketplace.
Don't alienate your audience.
I would say, don't alienate your audience without carefully considering how important it is to you first.
Okay, anybody else? Any other questions?
We've bored them all. Okay, all right. I just want to know, do I have any takers on my tweeted offer for giving away Best of Poly Weekly CDs?
Possibly. I already got one.
That's true, I know you do. All right, no fun for me. It'll have to come tonight.
People are looking in through the back, so I think we probably have to go,
yeah.
Scott.
Yeah, let's give them the room.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, guys.